Chapter 15. Sydney gets it the worst. The warship captain there begins a full-scale bombardment of the city a few hours after Adam interrupted Firi Dunra's speech. This captain claims the destruction is in honor of beloved leader, a fiery sacrifice for Cetricus Ra's death. Adam explains that he's showing off. The captain wants to look good in case Cetricus Ra is alive, and position himself for leadership if he's not. Images of the opera house in flames, the bridge behind it collapsing, are broadcast on the world's few remaining news channels. It's hard to watch, knowing that our lie about Cetricus Ra caused this. Adam looks like he's going to be sick. Lawson shakes his head, his lined face grim.
Psychological warfare has costs,
he says matter-of-factly. I get the feeling he'd have a different outlook if this was an American city burning.
If it's any consolation, my sources tell me that Sydney was mostly evacuated.
Mostly?
Adam repeats.
Yes, mostly, Lawson replies. Collateral damage can't always be avoided. It's horrible, but you learn to live with it.
He pauses thoughtfully.
Wouldn't have expected so much empathy from one of your kind.
Adam eyes the general.
Right.
I don't say anything. I just make a mental note of the Mogadorian's name. Reza Eldoth. I add him to the list of Mogs that I'm going to kill. It's the middle of the night. The three of us, myself, Adam, Lawson, are the only ones still down in the monitoring room hours after Adam's surprise broadcast. The others went to get some rest, something that I should probably be doing, but don't feel at all capable of. Instead, I slouch in a chair and listen as Adam robotically describes the various transmissions going out over the Moog comms. Next to me, Lawson keeps an eye on a tablet computer, monitoring reports from around the world.
I admire the moxie it took for a stunt like that, Lawson continues. You had to know there'd be consequences. You did the math and calculated that the benefits outweighed the costs. Of course, if it hadn't played out in our favor, we'd be having a different conversation, wouldn't we?
I glance at Lawson. He stares at me, appraising. Again, I stay silent. He's right, though. As soon as Adam told me about the dissension among the Moogs in Cetricus Ra's absence, I knew we had to exploit it. Adam agreed. Like Lawson said, I knew there might be dangers. I didn't care. Sydney went bad. But in other locations, Adam's announcement had better effects. In Beijing, where the Chinese army had been resisting the Mogadorians heavily and pursuing some pretty reckless counterattacks, the Moogs actually pulled their skimmers back to the warship. The captain declared he wanted to hear from Cetricus Ra before he wasted any more of his vatborn on securing the city. No response has come from West Virginia, which means a reprieve for the Chinese. Meanwhile, the warship captain in Moscow declared himself the new beloved leader. I guess he got himself a big head after seeing how quickly the Russians complied with his occupation effort. This declaration didn't sit well with the captain of the warship stationed in Berlin. He diverted his ship to attempt to assassinate the usurper. The two warships met over Kazakhstan and started blowing each other apart. Luckily, this happened over the Kazakh steppe, which is hardly populated. Because of the lack of eyes on the scene, reports out of the area are sketchy. We aren't sure if they destroyed each other, fought to a stalemate, or if one of them came out victorious. There's no bad result for us, though. And maybe, best of all, the warship positioned over Sao Paulo simply left. It floated up, out of the atmosphere, and is apparently orbiting the moon. The ship has gone completely radio silent. No idea what's going on with that guy. The rest of the Moog fleet ignored Adam, choosing to believe Firi Dunra. Still, the cracks were beginning to show. They weren't an unstoppable force. Three warships out of the fray, and we never left Patience Creek. Still, 20 to go, but we're making progress. Yet something about this victory feels hollow to me. It isn't satisfying. My hands are too clean. With Adam and me lost in thoughtful silence, Lawson continues to reflect on our success.
A strategic risk, he says thoughtfully. You boys would make fine generals one day.
I intend to do the rest of my fighting on the front lines, I say, finally breaking my silence.
Well, that's a young man's prerogative, Lawson replies.
He stands up and cracks his back. In the hours since we hijacked the Mogadorian discussion, things have calmed down. No new developments have come in for some time, just the usual status reports. I think our ploy has produced all the results it's going to. Lawson looks down at me.
It's late. Or rather, it is now very early. I'm going to get some shut-eye before we mount this operation. You should do the same, John.
I give the general a lazy salute, and he replies with a thin smile. The old man nods curtly to Adam and exits, leaving the two of us alone. Adam sits slumped in front of the console, his eyes bleary. You planning to sleep at all? I ask him.
Are you?
He counters. We settle in. I cross my arms and let my chin rest against my chest. I get an occasional jolt from a snarling Mogadorian's voice coming over the comm, but Adam doesn't bother translating any of it, which means it can't be important. We're going to board one of those warships in just a few hours. It's going to be the first combat I've faced since I started collecting legacies. My first chance to test out these new powers. My first chance for some revenge. I really should sleep. It's irresponsible of me to keep avoiding it. But the last time I tried, all that I could see was her face. I can't keep doing this to myself. I stand up and stretch my arms over my head. They feel heavy. Everything does. The air feels thick, almost like I'm swimming through it. Finally, that feeling of exhaustion I've been chasing after since we got here is beginning to set in. You'll come get me if anything major happens, right? I ask Adam. He doesn't reply. He keeps his face turned away, intently staring at the console. The Mogadorian communications have gone eerily silent. For some reason, instead of asking Adam what the hell is up, I say nothing and just step out of the room and into a cavern. This isn't Patience Creek. I've been here before. I'm in a long, dimly lit corridor. The walls are rust-colored stone augmented with steel beams. The air is hot and musty, and stinks like something rotten and alive. I do a quick 360 and try to orient myself. If I go down the hall in the direction where it gently slopes down, I know I'll reach the breeding area where Piken, Krawls, and any number of other twisted beasts are created. If I go uphill, towards where the lights are brighter, I'll eventually reach a row of cells. This is West Virginia, under the mountain. The headquarters of the Mogadorians. I feel pulled towards the cells, so I begin to walk slowly in that direction. Muffled screams reach me from up ahead. Even so, I keep my walking pace casual and relaxed. I'm not stupid. This is a dream, and I'm happy to play along. I know who's waiting for me up ahead, and I'm glad. I want to look him in the eyes. I reach the area where an alcove in the cave has been filled with claustrophobic cells. Each reinforced door is equipped with a bulletproof glass porthole to spy on the dank conditions inside. The first few cells I pass are empty. Then I come across one where a dark-haired girl presses her face against the glass. Her eyes and mouth have been stitched permanently closed with wire. It's six. I stare at her. I make a point to let my eyes linger, to let the terror and revulsion wash over me. It isn't real. He's trying to mess with me, and it isn't going to work. Another horrific vision greets me in the next cell. Nine, back when I first met him. Except now, there's a bedsheet tied around his neck, and he dangles from a rafter. I don't spend so much time staring at that one, mostly because I don't buy it for a second. "Why don't you cut the shit and show yourself?" I say out loud, knowing he can hear me. "This is getting boring!" Up ahead, the screaming grows louder. I approach a room that I remember the Moog set aside for interrogation. There's a window to watch through. In the middle of the chamber, a set of thick chains hangs from the ceiling. Sam is wrapped in the chains. Those are his screams. A viscous black acid trickles down the metal links and burns fresh scars into his wrists. Cetricus Ross stands in front of Sam, but not the way I'm used to seeing him. His head isn't pale and bulbous and black-veined. He's not 8 feet tall, and he doesn't have that thick purple scar around his neck. This Cetricus Ross is a young man. Like the guy I saw in the vision of Lorien's history, his dark hair is slicked back from a widow's peak, his features are sharp and stern, and he looks distinctly Loric. He's one of my people. The thought is still mind-boggling. He acts like he hasn't noticed me, although I know that isn't true. After all, he brought me here. I stand outside the interrogation room and watch him. Cetricus Ra paces back and forth, and every time he crosses in front of the chains, momentarily blocking them from view, the person tangled up in his torture device changes. Sam becomes six, her screams filling the room. Then Adam, Marina, nine, Sarah. I punch through the glass that separates the hallway from the interrogation room. It shatters easily and doesn't hurt at all. I float over the waist-high wall and land a few strides away from Cetricus Ra. He turns to face me, smiling like we just bumped into each other on the street.
"Hello, John."
I try to keep my gaze from drifting toward the vision of Sarah, tortured, unconscious, that hangs behind him. She isn't real. She's not here. She's at peace. I make a show of looking around the room and whistle through my teeth. You know, back in the day these dreams used to spook me.
Did they?
Now I know it's just you casting about in desperation. Cetricus Ross smiles indulgently and crosses his arms.
"You remind me so much of him," he says. "My old friend, Pittacus Lore."
"I'm not like him."
"No?"
"He showed you mercy. I'm going to kill you." Cetricus Ross circles around, putting Sarah's body between the two of us. He gives her a gentle shove, and she begins to swing back and forth.
"How is my great-granddaughter?"
he asks, making small talk. My eyes track Sarah, then flick back to Cetricus Ra. "Much better than when she was stuck with you."
"She'll come around," he replies with a smile. "When I'm done with the rest of you, she'll come back to me."
"Will your army come back to you too?" I ask, tilting my head. "While you lick your wounds and hide out in my dreams, they're abandoning you." His expression darkens, and I feel glad that I've struck a blow to his ego. He steps away from Sarah and towards me.
"The Mogadorians
were always just a means to an end for me, John. A neutered species of beasts that made their own home world unlivable with their thick-headed love of war and pollution.
He spits on the floor.
The humans will make for much better subjects once they're brought to heel. The others will be ashes on the wind.
Is this why you brought me here? I ask, staring at this younger version of my most hated enemy. To drive home how evil you are? Because I get it. Cetricus Ross smiles, comes closer, studying me. His eyes aren't the pure inky black that I've seen before. They're dark, but normal. Not changed through years of experimentation. The sick mind behind them is still the same.
I am old, John,
he intones.
Those visions my great-granddaughter put us through, to see my youth again, I felt something like nostalgia. Once Pittacus Law was my friend. If he had only listened to me, if we had worked together, we could have spared the universe so much death. We could have uplifted all life.
Aw, do you need a friend? Is that what this is? The part where you offer me a chance to join forces? Cetricus Ross sighs. We're only separated by a few feet now. I have to remind myself that this isn't real, that there's no point in reaching out and trying to rip him apart, even though I so badly want to.
No, John. When I allowed you to live in New York, I promised that I would let you watch this world burn. I intend to keep my word.
Then what?
Like I said, you remind me of Pittacus.
Cetricus Ra responds. He drifts back towards Sarah, strokes a hand up her bluish arm, and grabs hold of the chain supporting her body.
I tried to show him. Just like I will now show you. I wanted you to know what you're missing out on.
Cetricus Ra yanks down hard on the chain. Impossibly, with a logic available only in nightmares, the entire ceiling collapses. The room is flooded with that viscous black ooze.
I wanted you to feel my power.
It's like a dam breaking. Within seconds, the interrogation room is completely lost to me, and I'm awash in the inky liquid. It's ice cold and slimy against my skin. I try to swim against it, but it's quickly over my head, stinging my eyes, creeping into my lungs. I panic and thrash. For a moment, I forget that this is only a dream. There's a heaviness inside me now, like my guts are filled with thick sludge. My skin prickles. It feels like thousands of tiny mouths are trying to gnaw on me. But I can breathe. I'm alive. The realization helps me to calm down. I can see. Even though there's nothing around me except for solid, impenetrable darkness. As I float through the oily slime, I look down at my hands and light up my lumen. It works. Light shines in a halo around me. The effect only lasts for a moment. In my glowing hands, I can see veins of cobalt blue lauric energy running beneath the skin. The sludge painfully burrows into my fingertips, drawn to that energy, and begins to eat away at it.
Doesn't it feel good?
I look up. Cetricus Ra floats in the darkness above me. He's dropped the whole young Cetricus thing, and now looks like I expect. Hideous. He's shirtless. Maybe entirely naked, the ooze thankfully obscures his lower body. His skin startlingly pale in the darkness, the purple scar around his neck thick, his eyes hollow and empty like a skull bore into me. There's an open wound on Cetricus Ra's chest. The gash is just to the left of his heart. That must be where Six hit him. She really was so damn close. Tendrils of the ooze lap at the broken skin, worm their way inside his body. The substance isn't healing the wound. It's filling it in, replacing the ghastly hole with a chunk of pure obsidian. Another body floats in front of Cetricus Ra. It's a Mogadorian woman, with dark hair drawn back in thick cornrows. I notice that she has burn scars all across her hands. She seems to be unconscious. Cetricus Ra waves his hands over her, and the slimy substance surrounding us all moves at his command, burrowing under her skin, reshaping her. I open my mouth, and although the slime rushes down my throat, I find that I'm still able to speak. "This is where you are, isn't it?" I say. "This is real. Your great idea of progress. It's this sewage bath." Cetricus Ra smiles at me.
"You resist, but here, John, here I control the fate of all our species. Here I make legacies. I take the mundane and shape it, augment it to my will."
He holds up his hand, two fingers extend towards me, and my arm raises in response, completely out of my control. My lumen glows, the ooze tendrils coalescing around my hand. It feels as if my skin's being peeled away. A ball of lauric energy is ripped out of my hand. My lumen grows dim as the energy floats through the sludge. It's slowly eaten away, transformed until Cetricus guides it into the Mogadorian woman. Her body convulses for a moment, sending waves through the slime. But then fire surrounds her. She turns her head and grins at me, her teeth bared like a wild animal.
"I am the creator now, John," Cetricus Ra says. "Come, see for yourself."
My hands shake. My lumen won't work. The darkness surrounds me.
"John! John!"
My eyes snap open. Adam's got me by the shoulders, shaking me. I'm back at the sub-basement of Patience Creek, not drowning in black muck, not having my legacy stolen by a Mogadorian.
"You fell asleep,"
Adam says, eyes wide.
"And then, well..."
I glance down. My hands, which were resting on the arms of my chair, left blackened imprints in the fabric. My lumen must have triggered while I was in that nightmare. The smell of burned fabric fills the room. "Sorry," I say, shakily standing up. Adam hesitates, waiting for an explanation.
"You okay?"
he finally asks. "Yeah, I'm fine," I say, slowly walking out of the room. "There'll be no more sleep for me. Not until this is over."